I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central's TCS Plus, which is brought to you today by MTN South Africa. Now, we're going to be talking MoMo today. That's short for mobile money. And it's a fascinating fintech area in the telecommunications industry. Now, my guest in the studio to chat about all the latest developments in the mobile money space is Kagiso Motsepe. Kagiso is CEO of fintech at MTN South Africa. Kagiso, I'm looking forward to this discussion. Welcome to the studio and thanks for making the time.
Thanks so much, Duncan. Also looking forward to it.
Excellent. Now, mobile money is obviously a very big part of MTN Group's business and has been hugely successful in various markets across Africa, including Nigeria, the group's biggest market. As a starting point, what's the attraction of financial services, fintech, mobile money to telcos? Why did telcos, including MTN, decide to get into the space?
Sure. So from a telco perspective, beyond just providing typical communications-related products, so your airtime, voice, and different bundles, it was a natural adjacency to step into. So providing digital services and then financial technology services almost became a next extension of the different value propositions that were existing. So it was a natural sort of extension just to the business. It augmented our propositions and it really ensured that we were able to create greater stickiness with customers. So that's, the initial premise. But also if you look at telcos from a right to play perspective, if you look at the understanding we have of the customers, the data points that we've picked up on them based on their interaction with our GSM or telco, traditional telco services, that also put us in a position where we could leverage that understanding to extend financial services. So I think strategically, those were some of the things where, we felt going into fintech was a natural extension that could actually complement what we already offer our customers.
Okay. I want to focus on the South African market and in the context of what's happening in your other markets in the rest of Africa.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit slower, the adoption of mobile money in the South African market. And there's been lots of theories advanced for that. I'd like to hear some of your theories as well. But it seems to be gaining some traction now. MTN, of course, has launched or relaunched MoMo on a number of occasions. Yeah. It seems very committed to it now. But it hasn't necessarily been the obvious solution for consumers that it has been in say, in Nigeria or in other African markets. Is that because our banking system is so well developed here, or are there other reasons for it?
Yeah, no, I think you've captured the essence of it. I think our incumbent banking system is a lot more advanced in South Africa. And as a result of that, the number of customers that are banked in relation to other parts of the continent is a lot higher in South Africa. So if you're going to launch any financial services, you would obviously have to take that into account. So I think that's kind of the biggest reason why in South Africa, it doesn't take off to the same extent as it has in other services, because the amount of underbanked or non-bank customers is simply a lot higher. So you'd have to take a nuanced approach in entering the South African market if you are to win, right? So all that means is that you have to account for what the traditional banks are offering, where are the gaps from that offering, and then really provide a service that sort of distinguishes itself or differentiates from what the traditional banks are doing. So I think the generic or the traditional way of offering mobile money simply doesn't differentiate from what the banks are offering. So I think that's kind of the nuance that you have to take into account in South Africa. And I mean, even in Nigeria as well, I think the fintech landscape, the non-bank landscape is actually very competitive. So again, traditional mobile money is not as competitive as differentiated from the non-banks actually. And so you'd almost have to take the non-banks, the non-bank fintechs into account in putting together an offering. So Nigeria and South Africa in particular, that's where we found the markets to be relatively more sophisticated and requiring then that you offer something that takes that into account. And so that's what we've had to do in our strategy, really, to gain a lot more traction.
Okay, does that mean you need to be more sophisticated in South Africa and Nigeria?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Okay. And so how has that influenced your thinking in the South African context? How maybe talk us through the products that you've launched through your fintech division and why you've chosen to focus on those as opposed to the products you might have chosen to focus on in other African markets.
Sure, yes. So I think the market landscape has definitely influenced our thinking. So I think our approach has been to complement what currently exists and really to leverage ecosystem partnerships and obviously enrich what's traditionally being offered. Mm. And so to that extent, if we look at the market, traditional banks obviously would offer lending if we're thinking of lending as a vertical, but there is wide spaces in the micro lending space. If you take into account the data we have, non-traditional data we have on customers from a telco perspective, if we augment traditional scorecards, we're then able to extend mm-hmm. lending solutions to customers that may not otherwise be creditworthy. So it's those kinds of use cases where we really just augment what currently exists. So on a lending side, that's currently what we've put in place. Mm-hmm. Momo Pay, we looked at the merchant landscape. So point of sales are obviously prominent in the market, whether it's being provided by banks or by fintechs like Yoko, Ikoka. Mm-hmm. They're well served, but then the informal small, medium enterprise is not as well served. So they don't have low cost acceptance. And that's where we found a gap. And through Momo Pay, we're essentially looking to launch something to serve that market. And then the international remittance landscape as well. We've seen gaps in the market where customers are still relying on analog methods to send funds cross border. And so through Momo, we are able to then serve those customers by accessing them at their place of convenience. And given MTN's footprint across the continent, we're then able to use our footprint for them to leverage in sending money home. Mm-hmm. So it's those sort of gaps in the markets that we've had to identify and then offer and launch products. And mm-hmm. so, and across all those verticals, we've essentially launched products that address exactly those specific needs.
Okay. So what is the profile of your typical Momo customer here in South Africa? Is it a underbanked or unbanked customer who needs financial services, or are you also finding that actually people who have bank accounts are also using it for certain purposes?
Yeah, no, thanks. So that's quite a key question. So on one hand, definitely we look to address non-banked customers. So customers who are still relying on cash mm-hmm. And who essentially are not well addressed. Their needs are not well addressed by traditional banking system, right? So whether it could be from a cost or other barriers to entry. So that's on one hand, a segment that we look to address. The other segment that we look to address is then the underbanked. So while some of their needs are met by the traditional banking sector, not all of their needs are well met, right? And so though that segment is one area that we also look to address by really augmenting the products that they're getting from the traditional banks. Mm-hmm. And then the last segment is definitely the banked segment. And there is really not to replicate services they already get from a traditional bank. So whether it be Standard Bank, FNB, Investec, it's really to say over and above these services, what are they looking for from digital applications? How can we make their life easier? Mm. So that is the third category of customers that really through convenience, through value added services, we're looking to serve their needs. And then across the different segments as well, we found that if you are able to gain a critical mass in the non-banked or underbanked, that also draws in the fully banked. Mm-hmm. So for instance, from a remittance or person-to-person transfer, peer-to-peer transfer perspective, often if you have a critical mass of underbanked or non-banked, and many of those would be working for the fully banked population, yeah, often they'll need to then remit in some way. And so you can actually play that intermediary role.
Right.
So those are the different things that we put together in our platform to essentially attract these different segments. But each proposition will have to be tailored quite specifically and to be different, mm, you know, in order to really engage these segments, a one-size-fits-all approach certainly won't work. Right. And that's definitely what we found, specifically in South Africa, just because of how sophisticated the traditional banking space is, and even just the emerging fintechs that are coming into the space. A lot of them are vertical specialists, so they're focused on one thing, and they're looking to do that really well. So for a platform player that tries to serve multiple needs, you actually have to excel in quite a number of areas for customers to consider you instead of either a vertical specialist or a bank. So your propositions have to be really laser focused on the real needs. And your distribution model as well has to be as accessible as possible, whether it be through on the ground presence, especially for the non-banked or underbanked, and digital presence for convenience seeking, well-banked customers. So that's kind of the, I guess, the sophistication we've had to add in our propositions and the differentiation and tailoring we've had to do to ensure that we are able to attract the market.
But MTN, of course, has a large on-the-ground presence. You have distribution right across South Africa. You can go into the most rural part of the country and you'll see MTN branding on spaza shops and townships and in the most remote parts of the country. And that distribution, I imagine, helps you enormously in reaching every corner of the country with your Momo product.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, in your earlier question, you asked why would a telco enter the fintech? One of the advantages that there's an existing customer base and there's also an existing multi-channel distribution that's in place. And so you're able to piggyback off that in order to actually access customers and serve them. So I think that pre-existing distribution channel does actually help us reach customers in ways that an upstart wouldn't be able to. So you're quite correct. In order to be able to reach and serve the market, we very much leverage the MTN footprint on the ground, but then we also have innovations where we also ourselves acquire different foot soldiers in order to acquire customers on the ground. So there's different tactics that we use, but what's key within our strategy is that it's multi-channel in terms of how we try to get customers. On one hand, there's a physical interface because that's what our customers, certain segments of our customers prefer. But then on the other hand, also you'd want to be digital and targeted as well using data to reach customers.
Okay. Now you've got 13 million registered users in South Africa now. I don't know if you disclose monthly active users or if that's a confidential number for competitive reasons, but you have disclosed that Momo South Africa's revenue grew by 27.6% rather in the first quarter of 2025. I presume that's a year-on-year growth. But what's driving that growth? What are the products that consumers are demanding that's driving that number higher?
Yeah, so I think on one hand, we've really had to take a deep look at how we drive organic growth. And that simply means of our existing customers, how do we drive them to use more of our products and to use other services over and above the core products they're using? So that requires data and understanding the customer. So we've spent quite a lot of time really just understanding our customer behavior and then really cross-selling and upselling services or extending them on the services they're using. So that's kind of proven to be effective. And then on the other hand, we've also launched new services. So particularly in the insurtech and lending category, in order to, again, enrich what customers are currently getting from us and what they come to us for. So VAS, value-added services and recharges in particular have been very strong products of ours. And through lending and insurtech products, we've now complemented that portfolio, and that's proven to be quite successful. So that's really been some of the drivers to our growth. And so you then asked about monthly active users over and above these registered users. So as you broaden your portfolio and you're able to tailor it to, you know, unique customer needs on your platform, that then also drives monthly active users. So we've seen monthly active users grow in proportion to how targeted we've been in serving our customers' products. So, but that's the job to be done still. So, but the foundation to driving monthly active users will certainly be in the variety of products and the extent to which they meet customer needs. Also taking into account the existing banking services they get. So obviously, if you're just matching what already exists, the likelihood of the customer being active is a lot lower. Mm-hmm. But if you're complementing it, if you're offering them something they wouldn't access via their bank account, then that starts to drive a lot more uptake. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how we've been consistently trying to grow our customer base.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Interesting. Now, you mentioned InsurTech. What are you doing in the insurance space? Are you? I know the insurance of handsets is a big business for mobile operators. I presume that forms part of it. What other insurance are you offering through that offering?
Yes. So, I mean, so you touched on a key theme. So I think on one hand, it's really just insuring products that are related to our telco offerings. So whether it be protecting your contract, whether it be device insurance, whether it be insuring your routers, those are the different things that we do from a telco perspective. But over and above that, there is other product categories that still represent an opportunity. So from a funeral cover perspective, we found that that is quite a key product that customers certain segments within our customer base really, really need and have an appetite for. And
so they're expensive funerals, yeah.
They are. And actually, that's kind of why it's popular on one hand. And for certain segments, it actually serves as a substitute for life insurance. Right. They'd rather get funeral cover. Mm. And so that's been a product that we've also launched. And we've innovated in trying to make it affordable or customizable in terms of how you pay. So you can either do it on a prepaid basis or you can actually just get it in a traditional way. So funeral cover is another category that's been key. And then given the data and the understanding we have of our customers, being able to also recommend them motor insurance, that's another area that naturally fits with the understanding we have of customers. Mm-hmm. But the premise is, as long as if we follow the customer's lifestyle, there's always an opportunity for insurance add-ons, right? So rather than just a typical insurance product, we look at where are the opportunities for insurance add-ons. So for instance, if a customer is traveling, they take up a roaming product with us, there is a travel insurance add-on that you could also link to that experience. So in various parts of the customer's digital lifestyle, could you actually add insurance add-ons? So that's our strategy long term, to really have insurance add-ons that we include in as part of the experience.
Is there anything in retail financial services that you won't consider doing? Or is it an open book for MTN?
Yeah, so as a platform player, I mean, regulations and ethics will obviously guide what products we are willing to do. So within the regulatory frameworks, as a platform, we really follow our customers' needs. Mm-hmm. So I think at the end of the day, if one is rigid in what they think customers want, we found that to actually not scale well with customers, right? And I think you asked about Momo in its first iteration and second iterations. So I think part of the issue was trying to impose a template that worked in another market in South Africa and being rigid around what you focus on and don't focus on. Mm. When you do that, that's when you find that customers don't engage with your platform and essentially you don't grow it. But if you're flexible based on the data you're getting from your customers and tailoring your products accordingly, you often can be surprised around what solutions they're actually looking for that really stick with them.
Right.
So we're flexible in that regard insofar as it stays within the regulatory frameworks.
Sure.
Yeah.
While we're on regulation, what does the regulatory environment look like for a telco like MTN? Do you have to have a panoply of licenses from the FSCA and other financial regulators, or do you work with partners to do that? What does the regulatory environment actually look like?
Yeah, so from Momo specifically, obviously financial services regulations apply. So I think even from MTN as a telco, when they consider Momo, you would apply financial sector regulations first, because the primary activity for Momo is actually financial services. And so to that extent, given we're a non-bank, you'd find that a lot of regulations that are tied to non-bank influence our activities the most. Mm-hmm. And in areas that we want to play, we obviously have to consider whether we have a license. Should we get a license? What's the cost of getting a license? What capabilities do you need to have in place? And depending on how extensive that consideration is, mm-hmm. we would invariably partner. You know, so when it comes to lending, for instance, we typically rely on our partners' licenses in order to be able to serve our markets. So that we move seamlessly between that. But in areas where we feel like we have the capabilities and it's strategically a lot more optimal for us to actually have our own licenses, that's where we'll consider. But generally, as a default, though, we've partnered and rather focused on building products and actually serving customers as our core focus areas. So, but yeah, it's a consideration that we move between depending on just ease of implementation and resources required. So those are the kind of biggest drivers.
Sure.
But in terms of the general regulatory landscape, so obviously given the maturity of the financial services sector, the regulations are consequently very robust and very sophisticated and matching developed nations almost, right?
Yeah.
Because of just the level of sophistication of our financial sector. So on one hand, that's great just in terms of ensuring trust and confidence in the sector.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, in terms of being enabling for upstarts and non-banks and fintechs, that has proven to be a challenge. But what's good news is the regulators have recognized that. And after benchmarking and harmonizing their approach with other jurisdictions, they've come up with a fintech dedicated unit that FSCA and SOB put together in terms of the Intergovernmental Fintech Working Group. And really, it seeks to lower the barriers to entry for fintechs, right? So demystifying the regulations, helping to guide them in terms of how they can partner or really comply with regulations in order to serve customers. Because actually the regulators and policymakers do welcome innovation.
Yes.
And they found that though it has been a barrier for many fintechs, and so they've tried to demystify it. Mm-hmm. So I think that approach is actually very much starting to open up the ecosystem and make regulation a lot more accessible. So I think the landscape is shifting in South Africa just in terms of the ecosystem being enabling for fintechs. But there is still ways to go. I think if you just consider, for instance, what's happening in other jurisdictions in Africa where there is bespoke licenses just for fintechs. They don't actually need to rely on a bank in order to be able to offer their services to the market. But there we're also encouraged by some of the new NPS or National Payment System regulations that's coming in, where they're actually including a tier for fintechs to actually have their own license in order to be able to serve customers. So we're excited by the developments, and I think that obviously then shapes or makes us reconsider then what our licensing strategy would need to be.
Yes.
So the regulations are heavily influential in that. So, but with the developments that are coming, it also then kind of gives rise to whether or not we can get our license and the ease of maintaining that license, to what extent is it feasible?
No, so that all sounds very good. And by all accounts, we have world-class financial regulators, and it's good to hear that they're working actively to make it easier for fintechs to work within this regulatory environment, including MTN,
yep.
MTN Momo. I wanted to shift the conversation now and talk about Momo Pay, which I believe was launched quite recently.
Yes.
Is Momo Pay similar to Samsung Pay, Apple Pay, Google Pay? Is it a similar sort of product, or is it something else?
No, it's something entirely different.
Entirely different. Okay.
Yeah. So
please tell us about it.
It's aimed more at merchants, so your small and medium enterprise, but in particular your informal cash heavy merchant. Mm-hmm. So you'll typically find them next to taxi ranks. You know, they'll have fruits and veg, serve food, other things to customers, and so they typically accept cash their shops are not big enough to really justify getting a point of sale, and their customers typically don't pay by card. Mm. And so they typically have to accept cash in order to be able to, you know, serve their customers. But that comes with security risks and inconvenience for them, right? Especially when they now have to pack up and go home. And so we wanted to create a solution that wasn't as expensive as having a point of sale, but would allow them to still receive cash in a digital way. So we came up with Momo Pay. So it is really an app, but it can also live within a feature phone. So you don't have to have a smartphone.
Oh, yes.
Where through a QR, you are able to then accept payments from customers. So they can pay either via Momo, and very soon we'll also enable them to pay via card through QR. But essentially, it's just a means for our merchants to be able to accept cash digitally. We want to digitize cash, and that's what we're essentially launching. And we've seen this work quite well in our other markets as well. So given there's this tier of merchants that are largely cash, we actually believe it'll work also in the country for that specific merchant base. And we've piloted it in a few regions so far, and we've seen uptake to be quite strong. So we want to then, building off these pilots, actually scale across the country.
So all your phone needs to use this is a camera?
Yeah, so you just, from a customer perspective, yes, they just need a camera or USSD. So if they have a feature phone, there'll be a USSD string next to the QR code, and they can just type it, and then they'll be able to pay that particular merchant. And then that merchant will get a beep to say that the money has been put in their wallet.
Do they need data or airtime to do that, or is it all zero rated and works without data?
No, they'll need data, but very little data to be able to, or airtime actually, so that you don't even need data. Airtime can also suffice.
Right. Okay, but you do need that. You can't you can't do it offline. So maybe take us through what's involved in deploying this to merchants, because I mean, you're hoping to, I presume, to deploy this to merchants not just here in Johannesburg and in Cape Town, but right across the country in the smallest towns in outlying areas. What's the rollout plan? What's the deployment plan?
Yeah, so we've already begun rolling it out nationally. And really, it's an on-the-ground acquisition approach. So our merchant acquirers, these are essentially resources that we use to recruit some of these merchants. Mm-hmm. They will be covering the country, essentially, prospecting and identifying merchants who would be, you know, who the solution would be very suitable for, and essentially bringing them on board. Okay. And then also, beyond just bringing them in, educating them on how they can get the most out of it, and then constantly trying to get them to be engaged. So that's really the strategy for scaling this. It's actually much more of a ground-based approach. But increasingly, as you gain critical mass, a digital approach can then also be used to essentially get more merchants to come in. Mm-hmm. So it starts off being physical, but increasingly it starts skewing towards digital, because you've got enough of a critical mass to actually encourage other merchants, because they can see other merchants.
It's like a chicken and egg.
Yeah, exactly.
So one merchant will see, oh, what are you using over there?
Exactly.
And latch onto it.
Yes.
Got to get that too. That's what you're hoping, I presume.
Exactly.
And it just spreads by word of mouth.
Yeah. And then from there, you can use digital tools to nudge the customers or prospective merchants to actually come on board. And then from there, they're able to self onboard. So we've got a channel where they can essentially register and get our QRs.
And the benefits for traders is reduced carrying of cash. Obviously, that's very dangerous in the South African context. We know about how bad crime is in this country.
Yeah.
What other benefits do they get? Do they get a record of transaction history and that sort of thing? Does that help them grow their businesses? Does it help them get access to financing potentially?
Yes. So definitely transaction history is one of the other benefits. They're able to see which are their most popular products. The other benefit for them is they're able to then on-sell our value-added services and recharges. So essentially it just adds another product to their shelf. Mm-hmm. And many merchants have actually found that to be the attractive element of having this, that not only do I get a way to receive money digitally, But also over and above that, I can sell other services that are quite popular and fast moving, like airtime, data, and other value added services. So that's also proven to be quite popular. So I think the combination of being able to get a sense of your transactions, not having to carry cash, and being able to sell value added services over and above the food you sell, we found that to resonate within our pilots, with merchants. And so building on that, we're essentially looking to attract more merchants. But yes, invariably, that transaction history can then also be used to then advance the customers or the merchants that are doing very well, doing high turnover, high volumes with some sort of bridging finance. But that will come at a later stage. I think for now, it's just really to roll out the payment solution. But it does give rise to then being able to advance these merchants with financing.
Yeah. Is there any resistance in that market to going digital? I mean, is there any reason that they might prefer to use cash over going for digital options? Or are you finding traders are quite open to adopting these tools?
Yeah, so in our research and certainly in the pilots, what we found is the tools just need to be fit for purpose. So the volumes and the transactions some of these informal merchants were doing did not necessarily justify that they had a point of sale, nor were the customers themselves who were coming to them using cards necessarily. So that kind of created a conundrum for them where, you know, it just they couldn't necessarily get these point of sales. So for that category of merchants, you need other lower cost forms of acceptance. And I think that's where this particular product fits in. It's just a much lower cost way to still receive, funds digitally rather than physically. So I think that's kind of where it lives. So for sure, there'll be a tier of merchants that need to have a point of sale, need to have the option to receive card payments from customers. But then there is a tier of merchants that don't necessarily need a POS, or it's not justified for them to have a point of sale, but they still need some way to receive funds digitally. And that's where this solution lies.
I presume that MTN has spent a considerable amount of time looking at the security aspects around this. We know that, unfortunately, some South Africans are very enterprising when it comes to criminality. There is some risk associated with QR codes. I presume you've done a lot of work behind the scenes to ensure that this is a robust, secure solution.
Absolutely, yeah. So, in fact, in relation to cash, obviously having a solution like this creates a lot more security for the merchant. But over and above that, in terms of our QR itself, yes, there's absolute safeguards just around ensuring that fraudsters can't exactly try to hijack the process, you know what I mean, for their own ends. Yeah, so it's actually a lot more secure, and QRs tend to be very secure as a form of payments acceptance. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, they're very popular in Asia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about pricing. You've mentioned this is a competitive market, and you're competing not only with established financial services companies, but also with other fintech players in the market. How important is pricing? And given this market segment that you're going after here, I presume it's critical.
Yes. So convenience is critical for certain segments, and pricing tends to be critical for certain segments. So when it comes to this informal merchant segment, pricing is absolutely critical, right? So for that market, we've obviously had to zero rate a lot of the functionalities or prices as low as possible. So that becomes a key enabler. It lowers the barriers to entry. So even for our wallet, if you look at it from a consumer perspective, we've pretty much put zero fees across most of the transactions that they perform on our app. And that's purely, again, to reduce the barriers to entries. When we did our consumer research, we found that fees is typically why, even though a customer will have a bank account, they'll withdraw it almost immediately in one transaction to really escape further fees. And so to that extent, for that type of customer that's underbanked, you'd want to remove as many of the fee barriers so that they can see your wallet or your store of value really as a sufficient alternative to cash. So to that extent, that's one of the ways in which we just try to remove the barriers to entry for customers to deposit into their wallets, and in this case for merchants as well. We removed all the fees that then would be associated with their wallet, so that they can actually use it as a reliable store of value and not worry about funds that go in there being charged and lowered.
Is this all eventually leading, do you think, to a cashless society here in South Africa, or do you think cash will always have a role to play?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So, it's quite tough, but I think in general, there is a trend towards digitization of cash. So I think we will start to see cash being lowered, but I think it will still have some role, but that role will be a lot lower or smaller in nature than what it is right now. I think as solutions, as there is a proliferation of solutions in the market, we'll certainly start to see the role of cash being reduced, but it will still have some role, albeit much smaller
than it is today.
And I think if you look at developed markets, you find the same nuances that there's pockets where cash is actually needed, but generally digital payments is a lot more convenient for customers.
Okay, so just lastly, maybe just give us an overview of the broader fintech vision for MTN South Africa and how that aligns with group strategy, and also what MTN's role is MTN South Africa's role, rather, in driving fintech innovation within the broader group.
Yeah, so look, our strategy essentially is to build a fintech platform that serves consumers and merchants alike, and really to offer them digital financial solutions. So I think that's really our strategy. And so in building this platform, it's really tailoring our propositions to meet a variety of needs for consumers and for merchants. And for that to essentially coalesce into a super platform that scales quite rapidly. And that aligns very well with group strategy as well, which is really to build the leading African fintech platform. Mm-hmm. So from a South Africa perspective, we want to build the leading South African fintech platform that serves consumers and merchants. And then that plugs into group strategy, which is to build the leading African fintech platform. Mm-hmm. So that's how we essentially fit within the overall group fintech strategy. And so MTN South Africa is a huge complement and an enabler to that strategy, because essentially we are building off the fact that we are a telco. So that is our almost enabling mechanism or our starting point. Mm-hmm. And then from there, obviously, we'd leapfrog in terms of just addressing the entire market.
Yeah.
So they're a key enabler, they're a key partner, and many of our markets, the starting point of their growth journey was always the telco. So I think MTN SA plays a key role in just that starting point, that early growth phase. But ultimately, you transcend that and actually become a really strong standalone platform, agnostic of telco, that's able to stand and thrive, really.
It's a fascinating space. I really look forward to seeing how this develops in the coming years, and it must be quite exciting leading this business at MTN. Kgiso Motsepe is CEO of FinTech at MTN South Africa. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central.
Thanks for having me, Duncan. Much appreciated.